The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, February 12th, 2024.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do. Because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my co-producer, my partner, my engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
What a beautiful day it is here in Sonoma County. And we're live here, and it's really going to be a wonderful, wonderful show today. I have a very special guest with me. Joining me on the phone is going to be Dr. Kim D. Hester Williams. She's a professor of literature at Sonoma State University. She teaches African American literature from the early to the contemporary period. Additionally, she is an affiliate faculty member of the American Multicultural Studies Department, where she teaches courses in ethnic literature, African American literature and culture and language and ethnicity, well as the film studies and women's gender studies. Amazing, amazing woman. Very, very busy. And it's just an honor to have Dr. Williams with me on the phone this morning. I mean, I'm really excited. We're going to talk a lot about black women in literature and music. You know, it is Black History Month, and I thought that it would be a great idea to honor some of these women that have made such an impact on literature and music. And some of the, we're going to also play an old hymn to give you an idea of some of the struggles that women in slavery had to endure when they had their children torn away from them. It's really an amazing story. It's an amazing story of resistance and resilience. And it's just amazing how far people have come. And, you know, we have a long way to go. And we have to be very careful because little by little they kind of chip away from the rights that we have gained. Well, on February 10th, our Chinese brothers and sisters celebrated the Chinese New Year. This is the year of the dragon. And myself, my daughter, my grandson, Ryan, we are all dragons. Can you just imagine what it's like when we get together? Well, in the Chinese culture, the dragons are majestic and powerful. They could lead the world due to their dominant nature and ambitious spirit. I never thought of myself having an ambitious spirit, but I think there is a part of me that has that type of personality. The emperors, and this sounds very familiar, of ancient China often regarded themselves as the dragon, the son of heaven, gifted with innate courage, tenacity, and intelligence. Dragons are usually enthusiastic and confident. They are not afraid of challenges and are willing to take risk. They strive to break away from traditional norms and pave the way for a brighter future. Boy, I mean, in a way, that's kind of true about me. I've never been afraid to take risks or to speak out. And, you know, that's the whole point of Women's Spaces, is to demonstrate to women that how many women before them have done some amazing things and that we're standing on the shoulders of some pretty powerful and risk-taking women. And we're going to talk about a few of them today. Well, also, I have a few announcements to make that I think are very important, and that's on Monday. That's next Monday, the 19th of February, the National Organization of Women, SOCO chapter meeting will be on Zoom, and they'll be doing a special meeting. We're going to be having some candidates, and the candidates are the ones that are running for the Democratic Central Committee here in Sonoma County, and we're going to have folks on from District 1 and District 3. I'm really happy about that. The time of the Zoom starts at 7 o'clock, and we'll have two parts. Part one will be District 1, and part two will be District 3. And also, the audience will learn about the Central Committee and about each candidate. You know, all questions during the forum have been prepared for by the Sonoma County Now chapter. And the audience will have enough of an opportunity to ask questions through the chat, and I really think it's very important. It's very important that we know our candidates, especially on the Central Committee, because they give a lot of advice and a lot of encouragement and really have an impact on some of the decisions that are made. So just a reminder, that's going to be Monday, February 19th, and it'll begin at 7 o'clock Pacific time. And all you have to do is go to the Sonoma County Now, SonomaCounty.org website, and they'll have all the information, all the Zoom information, and I believe that they are requiring people to register before they go on. And a reminder also that the League of Women Voters is doing their second civics class. Ken and I attended the first one. It was so informative. You know, it's amazing what it takes to just get a bill to get passed through the legislatures. So here's the date's going to be Tuesday, February 20th. That's next week. Logan Pitts, who is a senior field representative and senior legislative aide at the California State Senate, is going to be doing a presentation, and it's going to be on how an idea becomes a law in California. And if you want to find out all the information, just go on the League of Women Voters, SonomaCounty.com, and they will have all the information there, all the Zoom, and I believe that you also have to register. And, you know, and by the way, all this information will be on www.womenspaces.com. And what's really interesting, I found this saying by Frank Zappa about civic classes. I mean, I remember in order for me to graduate high school, I had to take civics. Civics was a class that used to be required before you could graduate from high school. You were taught what was the United States Constitution. And after all the students' rebellion in the 60s, civics was banished. I think that's because we got too smart from the student curriculum and was replaced by something called social studies. Here, we live in a country that has a fabulous constitution, and all these guarantees, a contract between the citizens and the government, and nobody knows anymore what it's all about. It's amazing. I think that's why people are making such poor choices. And so if you don't know what your rights are, how can you stand up for them? And furthermore, if you don't know what's in the document, how can you care if someone is shredding it? You know, and that's what's kind of happening. You know, they're losing faith in our court systems, which is just amazing. The fact that you can be accused of something, you have an opportunity to prove yourself innocent. You know, and the old saying is, you're innocent until proven guilty. I mean, that's a real strong point in a free democracy. And we need to really, really be aware of that. And I just read something that was written by Frank Zappa, which I think is very, very interesting. He was a very interesting guy. In fact, many, many people that came alive during the 60s and the 70s were breaking a lot of barriers and educating us in ways that we kind of forgot that we need to be educated in. Well, you know, our history is our strength. And I think, I got one last announcement, and that is a great art show is happening. It started on February 1st. It's going to end on March 28th. And I want to thank my dear friend, Nasud Bourne, for letting us know about this. It's going to be at the Santa Rosa Art Center. That's at 312 South A Street in Santa Rosa. And it's a wonderful, wonderful place to go visit. So much art there. But here they're going to have a special one. It's called Figures and Faces. I'm not sure if Nasu has her artwork in there, but I know whatever is being displayed and the fact that she wanted to announce, I know it'll be an excellent show. Well, our history is our strength, and this whole show is going to be dedicated to Black women who made history and made a difference in so many lives. And basically, we're going to be talking about literature and music. And I thought it would be really important really important to just talk about really quickly about two women I think that had really an impact in the music industry. The first one is Nina Simone. She was born in 1933 and made her transition in 2003. Nina Simone possessed a unique, raspy voice and had a massive impact on the jazz community as well as the civil rights movement. In her early years, Simone changed her name from Eunice Kathleen Wayman, her birth name, to her alias, Nina Simone, to disguise herself from her family while trying to forge her career as a jazz and a pianist and singer. Between 1958 and 1974, Simone recorded more than 40 albums, leaving an incredible mark on music. And, you know, also, wonderful when you listen to her, you know, to listen to her singing and listen to some of the songs that she has. It's just amazing and beautiful. Like I said, a raspy voice that really made an impact. And she had a statement to me, I'm black and I'm beautiful, was her whole idea. And trying to present that to young people, kind of like what's going on today with Beyonce and some of the other black women that are making a mark right now. And also, it was so interesting when you start looking at Taylor Swift right now, even though she's a Caucasian woman, the impact that she's making on people, getting them out to vote and talking about democracy. I mean, women really have a strong voice when you start thinking about it. And boy, they really work hard to try to quiet it down. Another person that I think really needs some recognition, and that's Aretha Franklin. She was called the Queen of Soul, and she was ranked number one in Rolling Stone 200 Greatest Singers of All Time. And it's been said that no one understood soul music better than Aretha Franklin, inspiring generations of singers after her, including Mary J. Blige and Whitney Houston. Franklin was also the very first female artist to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987. Another African-American woman making a impact on our world. Just amazing. Well, like I said, we're going to be talking about black women in history and about their music and some of their literature. And I'm really excited that we're going to have Dr. Hester Williams, a professor of literature at Sonoma State University. And she teaches African-American literature from the early to the contemporary period. And what we're going to do right now is we're going to get her on the phone. But before we do that, Ken, we're going to play a song, and it's called Black Women in History. It's a single record that was made by Fuke, Reese Palmer, and Snook Nook. Interesting name, don't you think? I can't understand it. So like I said, when we return, we'll be spending the rest of the hour with Dr. Kim D. Hester Williams. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play that song, and let's call Dr. Williams.
We're about to take a trip and travel through time.
History.
Learn about some ladies that changed all of our lives.
First name Fannie Lou, civil rights leader, helped register our people to vote during Jim Crow laws in the 60s, back when blacks couldn't vote in this country.
She paved the way for future politicians, along with the first black congresswoman, Shirley Chisholm. Kamala Harris made history as the first ever woman elected VP.
So many suffragists been fought for this, like Nashville's own J. Frankie Pitts. Helped register thousands of voters in Tennessee and made a school for black girls in the 1920s.
Could not have done it without the pioneers, the women fighting voter suppression for years, like the Stacey Abrams and Felicia Davis. And so many women to name, that's why this is for the
black women in history. Black women in history. love to the Queen Rosa Parks who didn't give up a bus seat. But real talk, there were so many women who did the same thing. Like Claudette Colvin, she was only 15.
Arrested because she demanded respect and refused to be told her life was worth less. Ida B. Wells had a similar tale many years before Rosa Parks went to jail. One of the founders of NAACP, born a slave, she was freed in 1963. 1 year later, Rebecca Crumpler, first black woman with a medical degree.
Jane Hinton and Alfreda Webb, first women, African-American veterinarians. Fast forward 2020, Dr. Kinsey helps to create COVID-19 vaccine.
Black women in history, black women in history.
I love that song because oftentimes we forget of the contribution that black women have made and the strength that they project for other women. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, some of the black women that I know are so inspiring to me, especially when they tell their stories and how they've overcome that. So it's just amazing. Well, for you just listening, joining in, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome, Black. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my very special guest. Joining me on the phone is Dr. Kim Hester Williams, who is a professor of English and American Multicultural Studies at Sonoma State. Welcome, Dr. Wilkins. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, it's just a pleasure. And I just want to ask you one question. It's okay if I call you Kim?
Of course. Of course, Elaine. Please.
Well, thank you. And I want to tell my folks just a little bit about you. And, you know, you have an amazing resume. And I have to confess, I shortened it a little bit. So once I'm going to give the information, if there's anything that you'd like to add, please do not hesitate. Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay, Dr. Hester Williams is a professor of English and American Multicultural Studies at Sonoma State University, by the way, my alma mater. She currently serves as chair of the American Multicultural Studies at Sonoma State University. She also teaches 19th century American literature, African American literature, and culture. She is an affiliate faculty in film studies and women gender studies also at Sonoma State. And she is the co-author with Lilini Anisham of Racial Ecologies, a book collection of interdisciplinary essays on race and environment, published by the University of Washington Press in 2018. Her poetry is grounded in long tradition of African-American womanist poetics. She is currently an active member of the American Canyon Seroptimist Association and takes great pride in merging her teaching, scholarship, and research about racial and gender equality with her commitment to community service, social justice, and enacting an equitable, sustainable society in both personal and communal practice. And I know, along with being a teacher and an educator, she is also a mother. Is there anything you'd like to add, Dr. Williams?
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction, a very generous introduction. I will say that I am the former chair of American Multicultural Studies. Michael Ezra is now currently the chair, so I have stepped down from that duty. Also, Leilani Nashimi and I just published another piece together recently, published in December, in December of 2023, on care work. That's a field that's growing, a growing field of thinking about how to care for one another in the society, particularly in the face of climate change, climate change disaster is what I want to say, but let's just call it climate change crisis.
Oh, yeah.
And also, I will add that one of my very great joys is I'm now working as an editor, and I was appointed as the co-editor for Legacy, which is a journal of women's writing, and it focuses on early women's writing from the, earliest periods, from the 17th century in American life through the early 20th century. So I'm really super proud of that because I know you're going to talk about some women writers today. So I wanted to put a shout out for legacy.
Well, it's amazing. It's amazing how busy you are and how much you're bringing to the surface, particularly about Black women, because oftentimes it's forgotten, what an impact that has been made on music as well as literature. So thank you so much for all that you do. But, I always like to start out our interviews with just a little bit of personal. So to begin, let's talk about a little bit about you on a personal level. What inspired you to decide you wanted to teach ethnic studies and literature? And who were some of your heroes? Who were some of the women that really influenced you?
So I actually developed an interest in literature at the junior college down in Los Angeles, at Los Angeles Community College, when I was a student there many years ago. And I had a literature teacher, a world literature teacher, who was fabulous, very inspiring. And he taught, obviously, all kinds of world literature that I had not been introduced to before, although I was an avid reader and had been all of my life. As a child, I loved to read. But this was new literature. The world literature, these were books that I had not ever heard of before. And one that I remember distinctly was Madame Bovary by Flaubert. And I think reading that just really changed my entire trajectory of what I wanted to do. At that point, I thought I was going to be a physical therapist.
Oh, really?
That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be either a physical therapist or maybe a photographer, a professional photographer. But that book, I have to say, changed my life, because having a story centered around a young female character was very intriguing to me in a different cultural context, no less. And so then I just decided, and then he was just such a very dynamic teacher, that I thought, I can do that. I'd love to do that. And so then I began to pursue it. I applied to several universities, but I ended up going to UC Santa Cruz. And that was a wonderful place to study literature, because there were a lot of female professors. And I think you will love this, Elaine, that one of my favorite professors, who I just reconnected with last spring, is Bettina Apthecker. And if people don't know
really?
Who Bettina Apthecker is, you should definitely look her up. She has actually a new book called Communists in the Closet, but that just came out last year, and she's been on tour with that book. But she taught Intro to Feminism, which was one of the most popular classes at UC Santa Cruz, always packed with students, always full, hard to get into. And I took that as a GE class, and it really changed my life. Because I probably was already a feminist, but didn't know it. And taking the class with her and learning about women's history, which is something that is near and dear to your heart and that you also teach and also promote and sort of educate around, that I just didn't know. I didn't know about the history of women. I didn't know about women's struggle. I didn't know about the suffragist movement. I didn't know about Angela Davis, really. I just didn't know any of it. And even though I was living it, I was living the history, I didn't know about it.
It's so interesting how your history, learning all this history, the strength and energy it gave you. That's what it sounded like. When you're telling the story about you wanted to be a physical therapist and maybe a photographer, and then when you start talking about the literature, the excitement and the energy I feel is just amazing.
Yes. It was instant. It was instant. And so I Bettina's class, in her class, that's when I started writing poetry. I mean, I've written a little bit of poetry as a teenager, but in her class, I really started to explore my poetic voice and my feminist poetic voice, my Black feminist poetic voice. Because, of course, she taught a lot of Black feminism in that class. She and Angela Davis are very good friends. She's written about Angela Davis. And so it was not only just the books and the history, but it was also the relationships. Female relationships are just so inspiring. And to just learn about, not just like you said, the strength of women, Angela Davis, I mean, incredible, just an incredible life and contribution that is ongoing. It inspired me, it motivated me, and it gave me purpose.
Well,
it gave me purpose.
It's interesting you talk about Angela Davis. She actually inspired me to become a journalism major. I mean, I had a teacher that encouraged me to go forward with it, but all that was happening with her, and all of a sudden I realized, my God, I could report on these people. I can give opinions. It was just so exciting to me. Well, here we are celebrating Black History Month. You know, I mean, when I first became aware of Black History Month, I thought, this is amazing to me. And what was so amazing was especially the involvement of women. I came across a list of women and all the accomplishments they made. I thought to myself, my God, we are so ignorant about these things. I mean, I always like to say, because I was a journalism major, I knew a lot of things. But when I didn't know something, I thought, well, if I don't know it, probably nobody knows it. So I think it's really important that we celebrate Black history. So as a history teacher, give us a little bit of a background of Black History Month and why do you believe it's important? And again, what influence did having a Black History Month have on you as a young woman, as a young student?
I would say that, first of all, let me just start with the history, a little bit of the history, and I think people should look it up. One thing I would highly recommend is the Smithsonian African American Museum has a website all about Black history. I recently learned that Black history is thematic, that every year there's a specific theme designated for Black history. If people don't know, I'd like them to know that the theme this year is African Americans and the arts. So, to that point, Carter G. Woodson in the early 20th century really wanted to highlight the accomplishments, as you said, of Black people. He really wanted to acknowledge, and he wanted the country to acknowledge, as it should, the ways in which Black people have contributed immensely to the politics, the art, the social, you know, structure, and progress, I would say, of this country. And people, as you rightly pointed out, simply do not know. They simply do not know all of the accomplishments, the inventions, the contributions to the politics, to democracy, to ensuring and stabilizing and really sort of highlighting the importance of democracy, the importance of equality, and human rights throughout the world. Black people have really been at the center of that struggle to enact a society that acknowledges individuals and their rights, and also builds a democracy where people work together for a society that is just. You know, social justice, we just talked about Angela Davis. So the impact is very far and wide. And so that's what Carter G. Woodson was about. It originally was, most people know, originally was a week that he wanted to designate for Black history, to acknowledge and celebrate Black history. And then it's moved into this now, you know, month-long celebration, and encouraged, right, was the model for, now we have, you know, Queer History Month. Now we have, you know, Women's History. We have International Women's History Day. We have, you know, Asian AAPI, Asian American Pacific Islander Month. We have Chicano Latino Month. We have now, we have, as is often the case in the United States especially, but other places as well, Black people have served as the model, the role model for what is possible. I think that's what Black History Month has taught me, the endurance of a people who have been suppressed for well over 400 years in a society that claims to be one that is democratic, that does espouse equality and justice, but yet excluded a group of people, and certainly caused mass trauma and quite frankly, genocide to other groups of people, particularly indigenous folk. But these were people who were the foundation of the country. The country would not have achieved the economic, grandeur is what I would call it, that starts in the 19th century, and success, had it not been for the free labor of black people. And I say black people because they originally were not African Americans, of course. They were not Africans. They were Haitians. They were, you know, Cubans. They were from all over. They weren't just African Americans. But, you know, this contribution, there's no way for us to really pay due justice to what African Americans have done to make this country what it is.
Well, you know, you bring two things to mind. The first thing you bring to mind is what Dr. Martin Luther King said, is all we ask America is just live up to their promise, which I think is, like you said, about equality. Absolutely. And all that. And here you have a group of people that are oppressed. And the second thing is, too, also when you realize that here was a population that for 400 years were into slavery and still are struggling here in 2024, and yet you see the resilience, you see the energy, and you see the willingness to stand up and make statements. So I think, like, I agree with you. The whole idea of understanding the African-American history is so important. It's inspiring for all of us if we really start thinking about it. So what I thought we're going to do is we're going to take a little ride towards around in history. I want to start from kind of the beginning, like what you were talking about, where black people came from, coming to this country, forced to be here, forced into slavery. And yet they had some rich music and they had a way of communicating to each other that to me was just phenomenal. So let's start out. We're going to play this song, Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child. And I know you liked it by Mahalia Jackson, but, you know, I couldn't help it. Her song is so beautiful, but it's a little bit long. So I found a shorter one by a woman by the name of Jasmine Sullivan. I know you're going to appreciate this. And so when we come back, I would like us to talk about this song and what you see is the meaning and what is it trying to say? What is it trying to tell each other? Or even what is it trying to release in the people that who wrote it? So we're going to take a musical break, folks. We're going to play a song called Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child by Jasmine Sullivan, and then we're going to discuss the song with Dr. Kim Hester Williams. Well, let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play that song.
In a bad moment, I said a word. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Ooh, sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Ooh, long way from home. Hey, sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Yeah, sometimes I feel like a motherless child.
my goodness, I can feel the pain in that woman's heart when she sings the song. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And on the telephone, joining me on the telephone this morning is Dr. Kim Hester Williams, and we're talking about Black History Month and women in history, and we're going to analyze this song, Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child. Well, are we back here, Kim? Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay, can you give me an idea? what kind of comes up for you with this song, and what do you think the meaning was? What is the story there?
Well, first of all, it was very hard to listen to and to get through. You're right that particular rendition I do appreciate. There's so many. John Legend actually sang that song after the Haitian earthquake when they did the fundraiser for the Haitian earthquake, and he sang that song. As a Black person, the song has very deep meaning because let me begin with its origins. Its origins are during the era of slavery, U.S. slavery. William Barton wrote a book called Old Plantation Hymns, and he just basically went around and tried to cull together, you know, get together all of the hymns that he observed, that he knew about and that he heard about. He lived in the South, you know, for about, I don't know, 7 years or so, 5 to 7 years, doing this, witnessing enslaved people singing spirituals. And that was one that he witnessed. And, of course, it had the effect that it had just had on you and I and whoever, I'm sure your other listeners. It's a very deeply emotional song. And the meaning of the song is exactly what the title says. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. I'm not motherless, but I am. Remember, during the era of slavery, people were indeed motherless because they were stripped of their mothers. They were taken away from their families, children, babies, young people. Families were broken up all the time. It was a matter of course. It was a matter of practice. A standard practice, I should say, to separate families. This was one of the most tragic and traumatic aspects of U.S. slavery. If not, I would say the most, outside of the mass raping and sexual assault of Black women, which is connected to this tearing families apart. And so the song is a kind of lament. That's what it is. It's lamenting this tragedy, this trauma of being ripped from your parents, from your mother. Like the mother is this the maternal figure, you know, is the foundation. It's that emotional connection. You can even think of a physical bond of nursing. And, you know, Black women tragically were used as wet nurses. So they would nurse other people's children and could barely, if at all, nurse their own. And so, there's so many layers to the song and so many meanings, but the symbolic meaning is that the sense of being so lonely, of being literally left alone and apart from the most important figure in one's life, what you could argue in the song is saying that figure is the mother. When you don't have the mother, you basically have nothing. You are just alone out in the world floating, you know, and the pain of that, as you pointed out, Elaine, the pain that causes.
I can't imagine, you know, I mean, when I think about it, I mean, I've seen movies where you see it happening, and it just blows my mind when you think about it. When you think of the trauma, not just for the mother, but for the child, for the whole community. I mean, it's just mind boggling. Well, you know, but what's so interesting about it, with all this suffering and all this pain, here comes some of these women, like Sojourner Truth, you know, Harriet Tubman. I mean, some of these women, I mean, when I think of Sojourner Truth, what she did, you know, and Harriet Tubman going and trying to bring her family out of slavery. Actually, she was a free woman that went back into that world to bring her family out into the free world. It's just mind-boggling. So I thought, let's go into the second song as we're evolving. And I believe Sojourner Truth was part within the abolitionist movement. So there was not, I don't believe the Civil War has happened yet. Am I correct in that?
You are.
So let's play. We're going to play this song about Sojourner Truth, and then I would like to talk about her from the evolution of these poor women who are taking their child away, and here comes this woman who escapes into freedom and then does some of the things that she does. And I don't know if you know, how did she learn how to read and write? When we come back, maybe you can explain that a little bit. So let's go ahead and play this, Sojourner Truth, sung by the New Harmony Sister Band. When I listen to that song, when she says, "Ain't I a woman?" In other words, it was almost like men and women in that situation were not even seen as human beings. And that really is a big question that she's asking, "Ain't I a woman?" Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I have joining me on the phone Dr. Kim Hester Williams, who is a professor at Sonoma State, and we are talking about Black History Month and particularly Black women in literature and music. Well, welcome back, Kim. Now, what comes up for you with this song when you listen and you start visualizing Sojourner Truth? You know, it's making this speech to the abolitionists, and then here this poem becomes world famous.
Yes, exactly. Well, the irony is that she was illiterate. And so the speech, the famous speech, "Ain't I a Woman," was obviously transcribed from her speech. You know, it was written down by someone else. And so there is a lot of, in the literary world, there's still debate about that. Were those her exact words? We don't need to get into that. We know the gist of what she was saying. We know that she gave a very fiery speech in which she did talk about her humanity. And she, in that speech, talks about how much she despised the slave holders because they stripped her, as we were just talking about with the Motherless Child song. She was taken away from her parents, and even more tragically, I think, than that, her children were taken away from her. And and she had to work like a man. And so, yes, Sojourner Truth was an abolitionist, but she was also a very fierce and staunch women's rights advocate, a women's rights activist. And she was saying there to her largely female audience, middle-class white female audience, look, I deserve as many rights as you all are fighting for rights, but don't forget black women and what we have endured, and the taking away of our children, the separation of our families, the indignities, the sexual assault, which she very well must have suffered as a young black woman. And, you know, just she says that she had five masters throughout the course of her life. And she ran away with her youngest. That was as much as she could get, as much as she could do. I'm surprised that she was even able to do that, but she did. And she was a very big woman. She was very strong because of the labor that she had to do. So, yeah, and our woman is what we like to call in the literature or English studies, a rhetorical question, because of course she is, right? More than that. And she's a woman and more. And so she's just reminding her audience of the sacrifice of black women, as you articulated already.
Well, you know, what's so interesting also about her and her poem, and when you think about today's world, when so many rights, they're trying to take so many rights away from us. I mean, we actually have somebody running for office that says they're going to trash the Constitution of the United States, which guarantees certain freedoms, and which after the Civil War, different laws were written, you know, even when they came in with the Jim Crow laws later on with President Johnson, when they had the voting rights. I mean, things are constantly changing, and rights are given back or taken, given back and forth. And right now, we're in a place now where we could lose all these rights. And people learning, to me, what black history is so important, it shows exactly the length people go through and what happens to them when they have no rights, when you're living under a dictatorship. To me, the master was a dictator. He said or she said, this is what's going to happen. So I think it's really, really important. And then after Sojourner Truth, and we're not going to play this song because we have one other thing that I really want to get to, and that's Alice Walker's, that Color Purple. I mean, that is really having an impact on all of us. But also when Nina Simone sang, Billie Holiday sang Strange Fruit, bringing forward to how even after the Civil War, here black people have to endure, you know, lynching and all this other stuff that's going on. So I think that poem or that whatever they wrote back out with Sojourner Truth really, really tells a lot of truth about that time. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
So let's come. This segment is going so quick. You know, I can't believe it. You know, we're trying to pack so much stuff in because I think it's so important, and I hope you agree with me because this history is just amazing to me. So we're going to play a part of a song called "I Am Here," sung by a wonderful, wonderful black performer, Fantasia. I mean, I just fell in love with her, especially listening to some of the songs that she's singing in this particular play. You know, Color Purple has had three evolutions. The first evolution, of course, was the Steven Spielberg movie that Oprah Winfrey helped produce. And then the second thing was the play. And now we have a third a film that has come out, actually, also on the Color Purple. So it really had an amazing impact. So we're going to play the song "I'm Here," sung by Fantasia. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Kim Hester Williams. We're talking about black history and we're talking about black women and literature. Let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play that song.
I don't need you to love me. I don't need you to love. I've got
I've got my sister. I can feel her now. She may not be here, but she's still mine, and I know she still loves me. I've got my children. I can't hold them now. They may not be here, but they still mine, and I hope they know I still love them. I got my house, it still keeps the cold out. I got my chair.
Yes, she is here. It's just beautiful. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and we are in conversation with Dr. Kim Hester Williams, who's a professor at Sonoma State, and we are talking right now. We're going to talk about the song I'm Here and also the book by Alice Walker, Color Purple. So tell me, Kim, what's your feeling? I know that you have a real attachment to this song, so to speak. Talk a little bit about it. Hello.
I was very emotional as you were playing it. I hope I can get through the rest of the interview. First of all, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual assault and abuse. So there's that. You know, that novel resonates, as does Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and, you know, and The Bluest Eye, by Toni Morrison. So this novel is one of my, you know, sort of really, I don't want to call it my favorite novel. Again, it's just one that resonates very deeply with me, the original novel by Alice Walker. And the film adaptation, and certainly the musical adaptation, which is what is in the most recent film, is just really powerful because it talks about, it expresses and represents Black women's resilience. Resilience that is quite extraordinary. To be resilient, and women in general, being resilient in the face of oppression, in the face of abuse and oppression and invisibility, and just kind of use and abuse, as I like to say with my students often. You know, how do people emerge from that space of objectivity to becoming fully realized subjects and insisting that their full humanity be recognized, be acknowledged, and forging a way for other people, because that novel is just about sort of how many, you know, people don't talk too much about this minor character, Squeak. When Squeak sees that Celie leaves, Celie confronts Mister and says, "I'm leaving, you know, you've abused me all these years, but now I'm going out on my own." And that's when, you know, when she, that's the first time she says in the novel and in the, you know, the film version that we now know, the new one, that's the first time she says, I may be Black, I may be ugly, I may be all these things that you've been telling me all these years, but I'm here. The meaning, I have decided, I have taken control over my life now. You're not going to control my movement. You're not going to control how I define myself.
you're not controlling anything anymore that has to do with me. I'm controlling me now. I'm here. My personhood is now fully realized, fully established, and that is something you cannot take away.
Well, you know, it's amazing. I was just thinking about all the suppression of books, you know, book banning and all that. The most important thing that we learn from all this stuff is the fact, the resilience of women, that women standing up, and that Black women are such a strong example of that. It really is. And when you think about what you have accomplished, what Alice Walker has accomplished, what a lot of these women have accomplished, you realize that everything is possible for those who believe and those who stand up. Well, my friend, we are coming. Yes. We've just come to the end of our segment, and I want to give you any last words, any website. I'm sorry it goes so fast, but oh my God, I wish we had 5 hours. Any last words or anything you'd like to say? I know you weren't feeling well. And I'm so happy we're able to do this interview. Just real quickly, any last words in your website?
I just want to appreciate Women's Spaces and you, Elaine, for all of the work that you're doing to uplift and highlight and bring visibility to women, women's lives, women's history, women's contributions, and Black women, because I do think that it is amazing what Black women have accomplished and what they have contributed to the society, and I don't think we can never forget that. So go out and read a book. You know, I would recommend reading The Color Purple. If you've seen it, the film version, musical version, and you loved it, you'd love the book even more, because I want to promote books because I'm a book person.
Well, Dr. Kim, Kim Hester Williams, thank you so much for being such a great guest. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And remember, our children are the future. All children, all colors, all races, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. And this is Black History Month. Enjoy it, celebrate, and thank you for listening.
Because a woman in your life, and a woman in your
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, February 12th, 2024.